I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Mulan was in an early season, and she's a lesbian.
Mulan?
She was in love with Sleeping Beauty.
No!
She's she, and I'm me.
Not me, not Hermione.
Yo.
God, what is your childhood trauma?
I am a cocksucker.
Hello!
Your life's going down the toilet.
Eugene, some surrender!
I'm Rose Domu.
And I'm Fran Tirado. Yesterday's pop culture, today's takes, you know the drill. Rose, guess what I watched yesterday?
What did you watch?
I'm
not going to guess.
You're never going to. It's actually not really that guessable, because I actually felt like the movie was a little forgettable. It was Talk to Me.
You thought it was forgettable.
I thought it was. The problem, honestly, was the hype. Like, people were really hyping up this movie, and it really was just another scary movie.
I think I said that when I talked about it after I saw it, that people were saying it was, like, the best horror movie of the year. It was, like, elevated. It was, like, on the level of Hereditary, and it's not. It's
not
a really good horror movie, but it's not anything groundbreaking.
Yes, I remember you talking about it. I'm sitting here on the Patreon trying to echo and amplify my colleague and say
Thank you. It was
the thing for me. Okay, so obviously the casting was insane. I thought that the main girl, the final girl, which, you know, she was awesome.
She was really good. And I loved seeing Miranda Otto getting work.
Who is that?
She was the mom. She's Eowyn from Lord of the Rings.
Oh my God.
And she was Aunt Zelda in Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Did you ever watch Chilling Adventures of Sabrina?
Oh, wait. Girl. I watched every single episode of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and never not once realized that that was Eowyn.
Yeah, girl.
Oh my God, I am no man.
I am no man. I am no mom.
Wait, that's fucking wild. She ate in that movie.
She was really good.
She should have had more to do, honestly. I kind of wish that she had to battle the monster.
But I think it was smart that the parents were these very sort of satellite figures, because that allowed everything to happen the way it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very well-made movie, but it's not. You know, the past couple years, there's been this whole conversation around elevated horror with, you know, things like Hereditary and The Witch and that kind of stuff. And this is not that. It's just a really well-made, scary movie.
Yeah. I mean, it felt elevated in that, like, the script wasn't complete garbage. But it is still pretty silly. Like, they're likening demon possession to, like, junkie culture. Like, they were basically, like, this girl was basically getting addicted to being possessed by demons.
Yeah.
And, like, they all kind of got
ghosts, not demons.
Ghosts, right. And they think that there was this kind of, like, rushy, like, I don't know. It was interesting. I thought that the whole premise was interesting, and it wasn't something that I'd seen before. But it really was not that scary. I watched it with Dakota last night because I was just like, I can't watch this alone. But I totally could have watched it alone and been fine.
Yeah. There's not a lot of jump scares. It's really more a movie about tension. And obviously, tension is incredibly important in horror movies.
And also very important to Kylie Minogue, who,
yes.
Give us a single name tension.
I still haven't listened to the Kylie album in full in a way where I'm paying attention to it. I've had it on in the background doing other things, but I haven't done a close read of it yet.
I have listened to it all the way through while working. Yeah. The singles are it, like, for me. Like, I'm going to listen again, but, like, Kylie, just from her, going off of, like, her last album, like, her stuff can really blend together sometimes. It's kind of a Carly Rae Jepsen effect, where it's like, yeah, like, every song is, like, a bop, like, this is good, like, I love this disco, like, queen, like, but then you, like, can't really tell, like, the last song from the song before it. Yeah. But I'll listen again. Sorry, Kylie.
Well, on the subject of horror movies, I saw The Nun 2 last week.
I've never seen any Nun movie.
Well, there's only two of them, although they exist in the Conjuring universe. So I've never seen any of those movies, like Annabelle or anything.
Wait. I actually only learning last night that Conjuring, Annabelle, The Nun are all related.
Yes, all exist in the same cinematic universe.
Is Insidious also in that? Or maybe? Insidious is something else?
It might be. I don't remember. I don't know. But I watched The Nun recently because one of my TikTok mutuals was talking about it because she's obsessed with nuns, and she's like loves horror movies and said it was actually good. So I watched it, and the first movie is good, even though Tessa Farmiga is just such a nothing actress. So last week I was supposed to go on a date. I was supposed to go on a date with this guy who had canceled on me once before, and then we made plans to go on a date, and then the day of I was like messaging him and didn't hear from him, and so I was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna take myself to the movies and like do that.
Are you kidding me? Did he never respond?
No, he did. Like, by the time as I was sitting down in the theater, he messaged me and told me that there was a crack in his ceiling and water was dripping in.
I'm sorry.
And, even if it's true, it's just like,
why didn't you say that?
This is the second time something like this has happened. So I'm just like, it's not worth it to me.
It's so not worth it.
I'm just done. But I saw The Nun 2.
That guy.
I saw The Nun 2, and it was bad.
So bad.
It was bad. So the plot of the Nun movies is there's this demon who takes the form of a nun because it's like its whole purpose is to be just like incredibly blasphemous.
Okay.
So that's why it, you know, stunts as a nun.
And I'm assuming the origin is somewhere along the lines of like it used to be in a convent. Katy Perry started renting the convent.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no. So
killed her original mortal form.
Yes. It was in a convent, and then it takes place in the 50s. And in the first movie, because of the bombings during World War II, the like ground was split open in this convent and let this demon out because it had been sealed in there with the blood of Jesus Christ. And Tessa Farmiga is a prospective nun. She hasn't taken her vows yet. And she has, ecstatic visions from God. And so she is sent to the convent and she helps, like, defeat this demon. But it turns out they didn't defeat it. And it attaches itself to this really hot guy who then, in the second movie, is, like, going around to all these churches and, like, killing priests. Because they're looking for this saint's eyes.
Okay, and I'm almost into that, but it wasn't good.
Yeah, and Tessa Farmiga and teams up with Storm Reid, who's also a nun.
Storm Reid? What's she doing in this movie?
She's very out of place in the movie.
That sucks, because she's such an amazing actress.
Oh, and also Susan from the Narnia movies is in it. As a teacher at a convent.
I fucking love her.
I knew who she was immediately because she has such a specific face.
Her little, like, porcelain doll face.
Yes.
Yeah. She looks like a doll kind
of. She does. And so, I mean, Tessa Farmiga is just not a good actress. And I did tweet this, and I, you know, I hate to like reuse jokes that I made on Twitter already, but
no,
I will
forgive
her for her acting in The Nun 2 the absolute second that The Gilded Age season 2 starts and not a moment before. But yeah, it was not a good movie, but, and it wasn't even that scary, but there were a few good jump scares. So that was disappointing, but there's something else I've been watching that we need to talk about.
As long as it's not The Gilded Age, I'm okay.
Well, it's worse.
Oh, no.
So for some reason, last weekend, okay, so for anyone who doesn't live in New York, we've had two very rainy weekends in a row.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Last weekend, it like rained all weekend. I wasn't doing anything. Well, except I went to baby tea brunch. For some reason, I decided to start watching the ABC series Once Upon a Time.
Oh, yeah. Which is from 2011. Whoa, I thought it was actually way for much longer.
I did too. I thought it was it must have been something that came on like while I was in high school, but no, it started in 2011.
Wow.
It might as well have been
from the 90s. Like,
yeah, I watched the first season when it originally aired and maybe a little bit of the second season, but I fell off because it's
Once Upon a Time.
Because it's Once Upon a Time and it's insane. It is so like, the writers, I'm, like, worried about them. I'm worried about the people who wrote it.
Does it jump off of, like, Disney plot points? Like, it uses Disney IP, right, to generate story.
The story of the show is there's this girly who is, like, she's a bail bonds person. And this little boy.
Bail bonds.
This little boy comes to find her. And he's, like, I'm your son who you gave up 10 years ago, and I live in this town in Maine that is full of fairy tale characters who don't remember who they are.
Of course it would be in Maine.
And so she goes with him, and what has happened is there's this world where all fairy tale characters exist together, and the evil queen, to get back at Snow White after Snow White, like, gets woken up by Prince Charming, blah, 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 she casts this curse so that they're all transported to Storybrooke, Maine, and they all forget their lives and think they're just normal people living in this town. So that's the whole
Storybrooke
first season. And the girly who was brought back is the daughter of Snow White and Prince Charming, because right before the curse happened, they put her in a magical wardrobe and transported her to our world, because there was a prophecy made by Rumpelstiltskin.
Not a prophecy!
By Rumpelstiltskin.
Not Rumpelstiltskin!
That when she grew up, she would break the curse. And that's what happens at the end of the first season. She breaks the curse. They get their memories back. And then, so the first season is, like, pretty tight. And it's made by two of the writers of Lost. So I don't know if you ever watched Lost. But they use the convention of Lost, which is, like, half of the episodes are flashbacks. And they, like, tell you, like, a character's backstory.
Hey.
But it's also sort of like Yellow Jackets vibes.
Yeah,
And so like Once that. Upon a Time does that. So half of every episode is, or like three quarters of every episode is like what's going on in present day. And then, or maybe like two thirds. And then one third is a certain character's backstory. And you see how all of the different characters have like intertwined and like everyone is related to everyone. And I've been, I told Ryan that I was watching this, and I've been texting him sort of like random out of context things like, just found out that Peter Pan is Rumpelstiltskin's dad. or like,
what? Peter Pan isn't a virgin? That's crazy.
No, because of like magic and
he's
time
like a fairy
travel.
Dad. Like they didn't even have sex. They just like had like
no. He was a father, and he like grew up and then used like dark magic to become young again.
What? No. The mental backflips these writers have to do in order to like, it's just a reality gymnasium.
Yeah, and what else? In the third season, the Wicked Witch of the West is one of the main antagonists. So in the past, so I started watching this last weekend.
Wicked Witch of
the and in the past week, I have watched 3.5 seasons. I have been doing nothing else but watching Once Upon a Time.
What?
And like, I'm just keeping it on while I'm doing other things. And I'll tune back in when someone says, like, we have to save Belle from her husband, Rumpelstiltskin.
No.
Belle from Beauty and the Beast. Rumpelstiltskin is the Beast from Beauty and the Beast. But he also is the crocodile from Peter Pan.
And he's Peter Pan's dad?
No, Peter Pan is his dad.
Peter Pan is... Wait, so why is Rumpelstiltskin a primary character in this series?
Oh, because he's like the main antagonist. Him and the Evil Queen are the main antagonists, but the Evil Queen, who is sickening, she gets redeemed and like becomes a good person and falls in love with Robin Hood. But Rumpelstiltskin kind of goes back and forth because his whole thing at the beginning is like he has to find his son.
Is there anybody famous in
Jennifer Goodwin? Is like the top billed person. She was on Big Love, but that's kind of the only thing she's done since.
Okay.
Jamie Dornan, who was in 50 Shades of Grey, was in the first season as the huntsman from Snow White.
I love that.
Joanna Swisher Garcia, who hosted the Queer Ultimatum, is Ariel from The Little Mermaid.
Joanna Swisher Garcia,
who
queen.
At one point
queer icon.
Is like friends with Snow White. So the season I'm watching now, season 4, wait, I've watched 4. I've watched 4 plus seasons now in the past week.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not. So the season that I'm watching now, it's Frozen. Anna and Elsa
no,
are
in it. No, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not
because
Frozen.
This is like 2014. So this
what?
Is like peak Frozen mania. And this was the thing with the show because it was on ABC. So they had access to Disney IP. So they put every character in.
They put Frozen into
and,
Once Upon
and, like,
a Time.
And it's not even just fairy tale characters. Like, Victor Frankenstein is in it.
No.
King Midas is in it.
No.
And his daughter is supposed to marry Prince Charming, but he leaves her for Snow White.
Okay, who else? Give me more. I'm
Ursula was in it, but it was kind of a fake out.
Ugh,
but then it turns out she is in it. The Wicked Witch of the West, as I mentioned.
Okay, yeah, big bad.
Dorothy was in it, and I have a... I saw a spoiler that Dorothy and Little Red Riding Hood have a lesbian relationship at some point. I know, it's just so insane.
What the fuck? It's a fan fiction. This is the world's most high profile Disney fan fiction. Like,
but it's crazy, and they do
that's
kind of
so many
the later in I get to it, the more they sort of like wink wink to the fact that everyone is related and like it's super ridiculous.
Meaning they're all incestuous? Like, they're all fucking each
other? No, they're not incestuous. It's just, like, the family tree is very convoluted. But it ran for 7 seasons. I'm only going to watch 6 because the 7th season is, like, a reboot, kind of.
A reboot?
Yeah, it's like they start with new characters.
No.
Like, the story of the that we're following ends at the end of the 6th season, from what I've heard.
That is so... I honestly, okay, I don't even know how to process all of this because this is actually literally the first time I've ever heard the plot or, like, conceit of Once Upon a Time described to me in any capacity. I've only ever seen images of this show and understood vaguely that it was, like, widely popular on network TV. But because I don't watch network TV...
And because it's network TV, there are 22 episode seasons.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
And are they 45 minutes each?
Yep.
Holy shit, that's a lot of television, Rose.
Yes.
It was a really rainy weekend, but I'm concerned even for you and your mental
Well, because I've been watching it, like, while I eat lunch.
Right.
I've been watching, like, 5 to 6 episodes a night.
Yikes. That's a lot. If I was watching 5 or 6 episodes of Once Upon a Time, at night, it would be a very sedating... It would have a very sedating effect on me.
I am fully...
You don't
I'm
even
like
need Ambien.
No
just...
thoughts, head empty.
Ow.
And you know, I can't... It's the kind of show where, like, I am mostly paying attention, but I also can be on my phone
mostly,
or I can do something else.
I mean... You know, okay, maybe this is not necessarily my Once Upon a Time, but something that I have watched many, many, many episodes of, despite the fact that it is just simply not good, is Project Runway. There was a new season that aired.
Project Runway's great.
No, it's not. It's not good. It's not a good show. The judges
are not
good. And yeah, it used to be. But the judges
aren't
good.
Yeah, I would never watch current Project Runway.
Yeah, I'm watching current. Like, I'm watching this year's Project Runway with, like, Elaine Welteroth and Christian Siriano, who still hasn't, like, become a good Tim Gunn. He's just bitchy. Anyways, but no, that's like similarly like a show that I just like, I have on, I'm like kind of paying attention, I'm kind of not. I'll like clean the house while it's on. And
I mean, I'm mostly paying attention.
Oh, girl.
I'm like pretty invested. It's a little,
that's kind of sick.
No, it is sick.
But it, but and sick it's of to them. That's like, they're sick.
No, I'm sick too. I'm sick because I chose this.
I
chose this knowing that the quality is not good.
I was trying
like,
to give you an
out. Like, the CGI is horrible. Ugh. It's like shot, you know, in like, British Columbia or something. Yeah. And like, the acting is awful. Like, the lead actress is so wooden and like, bad, and it, but I'm enthralled.
Love. Look, I'm so happy that this is your journey. I don't know where it's gonna end. Are you gonna, you're not gonna finish it, you said.
Well, I'm gonna finish
the six. What season.
I'm gonna finish six seasons. I'm on season four now, so, and at the rate I've been going, well, I have a lot going on this week, and I'm gonna be out of town this weekend, so I probably won't finish it.
What are you doing this weekend?
I'm going up to Beacon to stay with my cousin and her wife.
Oh, cute. That's going to be a very nice little getaway.
Yeah, we're going to do, like, lots of autumnal stuff. I was going to just take... I've never been to Beacon. I was going to just take the train, but now I'm thinking maybe about renting a car and driving up. I thought that would be nice, and then maybe I can do some antiquing and be able to bring stuff back with me.
So Beacon is the town and Dia Beacon is like
the art museum, whatever.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Dia Beacon is categorically boring. And I've never gone there and been like, wow, what a great time. Like, and we as New Yorkers try to go up there all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly...
I've seen like, so many pictures like, of people with that mirrored
the James
fence.
Terrell, yeah, or the James Charles. It's like, girl, we've seen this, like... And then they add new, like, sculptures or whatever. It all looks the same. It just looks like, you know, like, I don't know, spray-painted, like, junkyard objects, like, in an empty lawn. Like, Dia Beacon is boring. Why are we going there? It's more fun to literally just rent an Airbnb and stay inside, which is part... It's, like, kind of what you're doing. You're just gonna...
Well, no, I'm staying at... You know, a lovely house.
And a lovely house. But you're not going to go to Dia Beacon, hopefully. Hopefully we'll be
forced to
go there. We might,
because I kind of want to just be outside the whole weekend. And, like, the leaves will be starting changing. I know.
But you won't go apple
picking. I know that it's beautiful up there.
Allergic.
Oh, wait. So I have an update on that.
What?
So I recently...
You have an update on your apple allergy.
On my apple allergy. I recently ate an apple because I wanted to see, you know, like, your body changes and, like, some people age out of allergies.
Rose?
I'm still allergic. I'm still sensitive, but I don't think the allergy is quite as bad as it used to be.
Okay.
And it's like manageable enough that I can eat an apple. So I could go apple picking.
What?
And I'm considering it.
Rose.
But you know, it's not at the point. I kind of still only want to eat an apple under kind of controlled circumstances.
Or if it's cooked, right? You can eat cooked
apples.
Yeah,
you can eat cooked apples.
You can have an apple pie.
Yes, or applesauce or apple juice or apple cider.
Or this apple fritter you brought today.
But what I learned is that the darker red an apple is, the less allergens are in it. So I think that's like a little safer. Oh,
too bad that red apples are the worst. Apples.
You think so?
Red Delicious apples are categorically like the least respected apple among anybody who makes produce.
What do you think is the best?
I mean, it's really just personal preference. Like people, like there's like zillions of breeds of apples. I once had like a book that was like an apple encyclopedia or whatever.
You're such a fucking nerd.
I'm such a nerd, but categorically, Red Delicious are disgusting. They're literally not good for anything other than applesauce. Like, mealy, tasteless, like, hard to eat. But, I mean, I love, like, a honeysuckle moment. I love a Gala apple.
Pink Lady Delicious.
What was that?
Pink Lady Delicious.
I love a Pink Lady apple. I actually love a Pink Lady apple. Honeycrisp is kind of a cop-out, but I love a Jonah Gold apple.
Do you like green apples?
For cooking. I'm not really going to go out of my way to eat a green, a Granny Smith.
Because they're more tart.
Yeah, and tart apples are much better for cooking if you're going to do a pie or something like that. But wait, okay, so let's go apple picking. Actually, like, we need to go very soon because I don't know how global warming has affected, like, apple seasons, but, like, there's very, very limited weeks wherein you can go to get certain breeds of apples and good apples. So I'll strategize and maybe we'll figure it out.
Well, I might go this weekend in Beacon.
Without me?
If it's an option. Oh, I want to go to a pumpkin patch.
You know what? Okay. This is kind of Once Upon a Time coded in that, like, brain rot TV. But I am continuing my journey with the morning show.
Okay.
And you've seen and heard about it on Twitter, I assume. Yes. What have you heard? What have you seen?
Well, I know that Reese Witherspoon went to space.
You know that Reese Witherspoon goes to space.
I know that John Hamm is in it.
And is kind of an Elon Musk character.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
That's about as much as I know.
Okay.
And I have multiple people in my life pressuring me to watch it.
You would love it. I'm starting weekly viewings at my house on Wednesdays if you would like to join. It is that level of, like, truly, like, I'm on the edge of my seat waiting and wondering what the writers are going to do this week, because this show starts out as like it's a show about a morning show, and then it's kind of Me Too, and then, like, Steve Carell is like this, like, big bad Matt Lauer, like, Me Too guy, but then the show pivots to being extremely anti-cancel culture and is trying to paint this, like, nuanced, sympathetic portrait of, like, a kind of maybe predator.
Okay.
AKA Steve Carell. Anyways, the show, when it started, was trying to be a kind of, like, hyper finger on the pulse, like, talking about pop culture in real time kind of show. So the news they were reporting on was the news of the year that they were writing.
Well, right. Didn't they do COVID stuff?
Yes. Season two of The Morning Show is literally all about COVID.
See, I could never horrible, watch that.
But the thing is that the writing is actually so, sorry, egregious that it is so good. Like, it is one of those shows. I feel like you and I, like, we understand the difference between, like, a good bad show and a bad bad show. Mm-hmm. Okay? And this show has so perfectly rounded around bad back to good again that makes it so sublimely watchable. And things happen in the show that are so shocking. Not on the plot level, but shocking that a writer would write it.
Okay.
And that I scream. I literally, sitting alone watching TV, am screaming at the TV because this is so wild.
That sounds like me watching Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. Obviously, like, one of my favorite things is that, like, in the beginning of the show, like, Reese Witherspoon is, like, I think, like, a brunette redhead, like, a reddish brunette head, like, and she kind of has, like, a brunette head, and she has, like, a kind of southern accent, and then by season two, she's just blonde and drops the accent, and she's just Reese Witherspoon again.
Great.
And then she pivots to being a lesbian immediately, and she's a lesbian
with Juliana Margulies, right?
Yes. And then, so by season three, the most amazing thing about this show is not only in the first episode do they talk about the insurrection, the war in Ukraine, and the pandemic. They talk about the pandemic every scene still.
No.
Not every episode, no. Rose. Every single scene, a character somehow finds a way to mention the pandemic as if it's, like, prevalent information, or as if, like, if they didn't mention the pandemic, like, we would have been thrown out of reality or something.
Right.
And you're like, no, like, we really don't need to be reminded that a pandemic happened and happened in the year of the show, because I think it's, like, 2022 in the show. Anyways, Bradley Jackson, a.k.a. Reese Witherspoon, was at the Capitol on January 6th.
Like Lady Gaga.
On January 6th with Lady Gaga. She was there on the ground reporting on it. And when she goes to space, which is a kind of deal struck with this Elon Musk figure who's trying to buy the network and save them from financial ruin. Right after this happens, the network and the show as a whole becomes full sci-fi thriller because the network is being attacked by a cyber terrorist who takes over the entire building and is able to, like, shut off the lights and stop the elevators and, like, transmit videos to the network and, like, text the employees things, like, and like, record their every move because, like, all of a sudden all their phones are bugged and tapped. It's so funny. It's such an amazing show to behold. You have to watch it. I literally don't know. After this most recent episode, I was like, weekly viewings at mine. I cannot watch the show alone. That's actually the other thing about it, is like, watching it alone feels crazy. I'm like, I can't believe that I'm experiencing this in a silo.
That's sort of how I'm feeling about the new season of American Horror Story. I wish I was watching it with people because it's...
How do you watch it? On Hulu?
Yeah.
Okay.
It comes out Fridays on Hulu.
Okay. I guess I'm going to have to watch.
It's Kim Kardashian will win an Emmy. She's the best part of it.
Well, of course
she is. She's so good. She's playing a character named Siobhan.
I know. Well, that's really good. That's a really well-named character.
And she says things like, did you see the clip that was going around on Twitter from the most recent episode? Mm-mm. She's like, so the season is about Emma Roberts, noted transphobe.
Noted transphobe Emma Roberts.
She's this, a former CW actress who just had a role in, like, I think we're supposed to imagine is like an A24 sort of Hereditary-esque movie. Mm. And she's getting Oscar buzz for it. Mm. And... also, while she's trying to get pregnant, she has fertility issues. And so it's sort of like Rosemary's Baby vibes. But Kim Kardashian plays her publicist / friend, Siobhan, who is like ball buster, you know, like her first, like her literal first scene. She's like on the phone with someone. She's like, suck my clit. And she's trying to, like, whip Emma Roberts into shape so that she'll get an Oscar nomination. And in the most recent episode, she's like, you have to, you have to campaign for this Oscar. Like, do you know how much work has gone into this? Do you know how many blowjobs were given to get you this nomination?
I saw that scene.
Yeah, Derek's jaw might never work again. You know, like, the sort of insane dialogue that we have come to know and expect from American Horror Story paired with, like, the craziest possible person to be speaking it, which is Kim Kardashian, and it's beautiful.
I watched that clip and was, like, kind of stunned by how truly watchable it was, but also, like, Kim Kardashian's not a good actress. Like, she deliver your face is kind of like kombucha girl. You're like,
well.
No, okay. The thing I'm trying to Google right now is there is this famed Oscar campaigner that the New York Times wrote a profile on, like, years ago. And she looks exactly like Kris Jenner, but she's not. And I want to know who she is.
It's just so funny in that clip because she's like, do you think Jamie Lee Curtis wanted to talk about being a Nepo baby? No, but she did it because she wanted an Oscar.
She wanted the fucking Oscar. I mean, like, that's really real. I'm just, like, kind of curious about... So can you tell me, actually, without spoiling, like, how the horror has started to be folded in?
Yeah, so Emma Roberts is trying to get pregnant. She's having fertility issues. And so she goes to this fertility center to have an embryo implanted, and things, weird things are happening. She, like, thinks she's being stalked. Someone breaks into her apartment. it's very like Rosemary's Baby vibes. Like she thinks weird stuff is happening and everyone around her is telling her it's not and gaslighting her. So that's where the horror is coming in. And there's like some body horror stuff, but there hasn't been that much of it yet. It hasn't been that spooky. I mean, it's been spooky, but not scary.
Okay.
And I think there are only maybe 2 episodes left because this is...
What?
Well, this is part 1 of the season because of the strike.
Right, they had
the halt. But hopefully they'll be able to resume production soon.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch. It seems like in comparison to all the other American Horror Stories, well, I shouldn't say that because I haven't watched the most recent ones, but if it's like kind of light horror, I'm like interested to see what a more understated or maybe reserved
version. It's not understated.
It's not at all.
It's like, not at all. Not at all.
Also, I finally...
It just is kind of crazy that they're doing this pregnancy storyline when there have been so many pregnancy storylines in American Horror Story. Like last week... When I watched the first episode of the new season, I then went back and watched the pilot of the first season, Murder House. Mm. And literally in that episode, Connie Britton gets pregnant. Like, they have done some kind of pregnancy thing.
Yeah.
Pretty much every season.
Yeah.
In America, in Murder House, I'm pretty sure in Asylum, in Coven, Sarah Paulson's trying to get pregnant, in Hotel. Gaga is collecting babies. There's always some kind of like hysterical pregnancy or magical
being
pregnancy.
Pregnant is horrific.
Yes,
it is body horror.
Yeah. But this is like very like directly, obviously, an homage to Rosemary's Baby. It's also the first American Horror Story season that's based on existing IP. It was adapted from a novel that I think maybe. Hasn't even been released yet.
You know, the girls have been asking for an American Horror Story episode.
I think we should do it.
We should do a Patreon one. I also feel like I've never seen Rosemary's Baby. Never.
Oh,
and that's
my God.
One of your favorites.
It's one of my favorite scary movies. I will never forget watching it for the first time. I actually wet the bed that night in my grandparents' house on Long Island.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I wet the bed that night at my grandparents' house
I was
on Long Island.
Far too young to watch it. But that's how I consumed a lot of media as a child.
I'm so
being too young.
Being too young. I by the way, I've, just for the curiosity of the virgins, I found this woman. Her name is Peggy Siegel. She looks exactly like Kris Jenner. Look at this. Isn't that jarring? She's a famed Oscar.
She could be Kris Jenner's Madame Tussauds wax.
Yes!
Wax
her whole job is like running like Oscar campaigns. Like,
I mean, the people
schmoozes.
Who do that are like the evilest,
oh, yeah.
most jaded...
Most powerful,
most
efficient,
powerful people in the entertainment
hardest
industry.
Workers.
Like, they know where the bodies are buried because they buried them.
Completely unstoppable. Do not try and cross an Oscar PR girl. Like, absolutely, they will eat you alive. I would never in my life challenge someone who works in awards, in an awards organization. Mm-mm. No. Scary.
Definitely not.
Just to, like, cap this, like, little culture catch-up, something else that I did watch recently was Dix the Musical by Josh Sharp and Aaron Jackson. I'm sure you've already seen, like, all of our friends are posting about this movie.
Or are in it.
Or are in it, yeah. Bowen's in it. Our good friend Megan Mullally is in it.
Our good Judy Megan.
Friend of the pod, Megan Mullally and Nathan Lane are in it. They are amazing, amazing. This movie, I watched it in a screening with Josh and Aaron, and it was such a bizarre experience because I just, from the opening scene through the entire movie all the way until the end, I just kept asking myself, how did this movie get made? Like, how? Like, it is such a baffling, disgusting, like, knowingly, like wild, gross roller coaster of a film that is so kind of, like, faggoty and also so, like, polarizing for the sake of being polarizing. I was like, how did this get made? Is kind of like one of those. But like different from Bottoms, which is kind of like another movie where it's like it goes off the rails and you're like, oh my God, how did this movie get made? But I think that something I want to know, like, kind of what your relationship is to films like this one, which I would say, first of all, I would recommend Dixon Musical to anybody who wants to go see it and anybody that is like ready to be completely shocked by whatever it is that they see or watch. But it, to me, it's in the category of like Barb and Star, Dumb and Dumber. It's like Cheech and Chong. Did you ever watch like those movies? It's yeah. kind of like, it's kind of like faggot white chicks. Did you ever watch White Chicks?
Yeah, which I like, but those are not like my preferred type of movies.
At all.
Like a screwball comedy.
Is that, that's what it is, a screwball comedy. So I actually kind of like, I was on board for Barb and Star just because it's like women.
Yeah, I don't think Barb and Star is as good as like gay people on Twitter think it is, but it's still pretty good.
I also don't. I think the movie, much like these other films, are like kind of hard to follow. And Dix the Musical is another one where it's just like things just kind of happen and you're like, work. Okay, let's do this. Like, I can't believe I'm watching this. What Megan Mullally does is so beyond funny in this film. Like, it's worth it to watch it just for her. But it's also amazing to watch Josh and Aaron, like, get their moment when they've been, like, comedic voices behind, like, so many other films and projects. They're, like, the comedians. Like, they're in Community with so many of our friends. Yeah, I'm excited to see what they make next. If this is, like, the most... This is, like, the most wackadoodle, like, debut movie they could possibly make.
Very exciting.
Like, how did they get Megan Thee Stallion in this movie? She is such a real one for doing it. And she seemed to have tons of fun. I loved.
Great. Well, I guess that's where we're gonna wrap up this culture chit chat.
Right.
See you next week.
Bye.
And now a clip from our Patreon. Become a patron at patreon.com/likeavirgin for weekly bonus episodes and more. Mwah. Today, what we just decided we were going to talk about is autumn.
Autumn. Ever
fall.
Heard of it?
Fall. Fall into my ass. fall is... I know I'm going to...
Right now I'm... we're giving like... Like fifth grader who like working on a book or like giving a presentation on a book report but didn't read the book.
No, so okay.
Fall is interesting.
No, fall is my favorite season.
Fall is my favorite season. Is it your favorite season? Totally my favorite season.
I think you're more of a summer girl.
I'm a summer girl, yeah. I'd say it is summer.
You're a summer girl by Haim.
Summer girl by Haim. Yeah.
But I love fall.
Yeah.
I love everything about it. I don't want to sound like
Satanist girl autumn.
Yeah. Blasphemous girl autumn. Yeah. I think especially as someone who grew up in a place that doesn't have seasons, mm-hmm. What I like more than anything is the noticeable changing of the seasons. And mm-hmm. that's why I love fall, because it's so mm-hmm. transitional.
Mm-hmm. In an effort to veer us away from a conversation where we discuss the weather.
Well, that's not the thing that I love the most about fall.
Right,
like,
right.
The things that I love about fall are the rituals of it. What? You were the one who suggested this episode topic, okay?
No. I'm not being helpful.
You dumb bitch.
I'm not being helpful. Let me just start with this. What is a visceral memory of autumn you have as a child? Whether it's something you do with candy apples, the first time you saw fall leaves, a first autumn in New York, maybe a poignant memory about, you're like, I'm in New York and it's autumn. I'm experiencing autumn in New York, a la Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong kind of moment. Do you have something where it's like, oh, like, I'm fully in a Meg Ryan movie right now?
Yeah. Being a kid and being in Central Park.
Same.
Because we always used to come up here this time of year to visit my grandparents and my other family on Long Island. And we would always come into the city. And I do have a very... very specific memory of my uncle Ira and his wife coming in to visit them when they lived here, and like going to Central Park, going to some like place to get pancakes and just being totally gagged by New York in fall.
The first time you go to New York, you feel like you're in a movie. Sorry. Period. Hate to be corny about it. But, like, on my first visit to New York, I definitely went to Central Park. And I remember the feeling of being in that park and
climbing one of those huge rocks.
Climbing on the huge rocks, but also Rose, going to see the Balto statue. I made pilgrimage to go and see it because I knew it was there. But it's like, you kind of have to like go on a map and like find it.
Mm. I'm more into the Alice in Wonderland statue.
Okay.
Myself.
I love that. But, you know, if I haven't already said it on the record, Balto is hot. Balto is hot. He has Kevin Bacon's voice. This is something that queer and trans people know to be true.
Uh-huh.
Were you ever sexually attracted to Balto?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I've been sexually attracted
cool,
to other...
Cool, so you're other... better than all
no,
of us,
I've been
I guess.
Sexually other attracted to other animated animal characters.
Okay, let's follow that.
Okay.
Which ones?
Well, okay, I mean, obviously the tiger from Zootopia.
110%.
But, like, that is definitely a humanoid, like an anthropomorphized
yes,
kind of tiger.
Furry, like, making furries, like... It's helping furries discover themselves as kids.
I think...
Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger. Duh.
Down.
Tony
yeah.
the Tiger could...
Get it.
Destroy me.
Yeah. 100%. Older Simba. Middle transition Simba.
Yeah.
Like...
And Mufasa, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, right after Jonathan...
And Nala.
Oh my god, I just saw an amazing meme about the look that Nala gives Simba after he, like, tumbles on top of her when they're wrestling in the grass, and she looks at him like, you trying to fuck? I mean, do you remember that scene?
No.
Oh my god, the sexual tension between
the
these
Lion
lions
King,
was crazy!
The Lion King's not really my... I don't. That's not my favorite Disney movie. I was firmly in the princess camp.
Okay.
So, the Lion King really didn't do it for me.
Were there any other animated dogs or tigers or lions that you found attractive? Robin Hood, perhaps? In the Disney's Robin Hood is another one that a lot of people think is
hot. Although I did love that movie.
Love that movie.
When I was a kid.
So
I haven't seen
Robin
it in
Hood
a long
was
time.
Hot. You're so weird.
Yeah, I didn't think about him like that. What other
I didn't
animated...
think about him like that. Oh, once again with this like moral purity. Okay.
What other animated animals have I been attracted to? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was just curious. I think it's
what
like...
about you?
Well, I've already named like
okay.
Yeah, Robin was definitely one of them. Tony the Tiger is definitely kind of in that category. I think a lot, this isn't for me, but there are many, many queer people that will understand when I name that Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron
yeah.
was hot.
Yeah.
Not to me, but to others, to many in our community.
Sure.
Spirit was a hot horse. A sexy horse.
I'm a horse girl, but not like I want to fuck the horses.
Yeah, unless it's like the horse from Daniel Radcliffe's Equus.
Well, he doesn't. We've had this argument before.
He
doesn't fuck the horses.
He gets right. He doesn't fuck the horses.
He gets
fucked by the horses.
He blinds the horses.
He blinds horses.
He does not have sex with the horses
after he bottoms for them.
No, he has sex in the stable, and he feels bad that the horses witnessed it, so he blinds them all.
Right.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3XS through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.